As you've probably heard by now, we've teamed up with BetMGM this season. We'll be using BetMGM lines to make all of our picks, and we'll have special offers for our listeners each week. If you haven't signed up for BetMGM yet, use bonus code THEATHLETIC, and you'll get a one-year subscription to The Athletic, plus up to a $1,500 first bet offer on your first wager with BetMGM. Here's how it works. Download the BetMGM app and sign up using bonus code THEATHLETIC. Make your first deposit of at least $10, place your first bet on any game, and claim your voucher for a one-year subscription to The Athletic. See BetMGM.com for terms. U.S. promotional offers not available in D.C., Mississippi, New York, Nevada, Ontario, or Puerto Rico. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. Available in the U.S. Call 877-8-HOPE-NY or text HOPE-NY-467-369 in New York. Call 1-800-NEXT-STEP in Arizona. 1-800-327-5050 in Massachusetts. 1-800-BETS-OFF in Iowa. 1-800-270-7117 for confidential help in Michigan. 1-800-981-0023 in Puerto Rico. First bet offer for new customers only in partnership with Kansas Crossing Casino and Hotel. Don't forget, if you haven't signed up for BetMGM yet, use bonus code THEATHLETIC and you'll get a one-year subscription to The Athletic, plus up to a $1,500 first bet offer on your first wager.
The Athletic.
This is Talk of the Devils, the Athletics podcast dedicated to Manchester United. And well, I don't even know what to really say anymore, but we're going to talk about Manchester United's crazy 3-3 draw against Galatasaray. I'd be more than happy if these Champions League games weren't quite as crazy, although I don't know how many we've got left, as we'll find out over the course of this podcast. It's 9:45 on Wednesday evening in the UK. It's a lot later in Turkey, where Andy Mitten is joining us from his hotel room after being at the game tonight. Carl Anker and Laurie Whitwell are also here. Laurie is our official FC Copenhagen, FC Bayern Munich correspondent. He's got eyes on. Anything happens there, we'll react to it, of course. You'll know the score by the time this podcast reaches your ears, but we don't know it at the moment. Andy, I've got to start with you. Forget Copenhagen and Bayern Munich for the minute. What did you make of that?
I feel so conflicted, Ian, because I feel that Manchester United played well and did enough to win the game, scored three fantastic goals. At an hour, I thought, surely Manchester United cannot not win this match. You're 3-1 up. And yet, this is the team in Europe this season. It's the same old. The team conceded too many goals. I think it's 14 in five matches. And are incapable of holding onto a league. And I just feel very frustrated. But 1 point from six against Galatasaray, it's not just about tonight, Ian. This has been a pattern throughout this season in almost every Champions League matches. The team cannot hold on to leads. I know what the talking points will be. Andre Onana, he made high-profile mistakes in the Champions League, which will be extremely costly, probably financially as well. I can pick out positives as well, Ian. The Garnacho, fantastic finish. Bruno Fernandes, Scott McTominay. I thought Anthony had a really good game. As an experience watching it in the stadium, the atmosphere is almost like no other. It's incredible. I know we spoke about it before the game. I went to the game thinking, is this going to be on? It's been raining heavily for the last 12 hours in Istanbul. The streets are like small rivers, just walking through everywhere you go, just rain cascading, because it's quite a hilly city. But the game went ahead and the pitch actually looked all right. I was pitch side before the game, but I spoke to people who were on it, who know more about, you know, what it's like, and the pitch held up well. But frustrating, you can probably tell in my voice, 1 point should have been 3 points. And I've just watched, I missed the last metro home at midnight and I got a taxi. And the taxi driver had Copenhagen Bayern Munich on. So, is it only 0-0? I'm sort of watching it. I've come to this city 4 times to watch Manchester United play. I managed to see 3 of the games, and I've still yet to see United win one of them. So, cursing a little bit.
Yeah, United's away form's just been laughable in this competition, really, hasn't it? I mean, how on earth you can score 9 goals in 3 games away from home in a Champions League group stage and have just 1 point to show for it? I have absolutely no idea. Laurie, I'll come to you. What's happening in this Bayern-Copenhagen game?
Copenhagen nearly scored So that would have been curtains, right? Two brilliant saves in the 87th minute. And now Bayern Munich in the 93rd minute have just been awarded a penalty for handball. But there's a VAR review. We love a VAR review, don't we? Is there ever a United game? I know that United aren't directly involved in this, but you know, in some regard... Oh, she's ruled it out. The referee has ruled it out now. So no penalty for Bayern Munich in the last injury time. I wouldn't be a good commentator, would I? That was awful description. Sorry, listeners.
It was a little bit, considering they're all going to know what happened as well by the time they hear this. Carl, there was lots of people calling it a Champions League classic. Laurie may have a different view on this, possibly, and I'll ask him in a moment once he's ripped his eyes away from that fascinating other group game in the Champions League for Manchester United in Group A. But did you enjoy it? I don't know.
The Europa League theme was just ringing through my head in those last 15 minutes.
Is that what that was?
That was my attempt at the Europa League theme.
Did you do the karaoke at the Christmas party the other night, Carl? Is that...
I did not.
Is that what they were treated to?
I did not do karaoke at the Christmas party.
I thought that was a Gazprom theme tune initially, but yeah.
Well, there you go. Listeners, you can mail in and tell me if I got that right.
I think it's right.
That was not football. I watched that on TNT Sport. Fletch called that like schoolboy football, the way everyone was following the ball around. Rio Ferdinand said it was like a basketball game. And I think Fletch said it was a bit like the 12th round heavyweight boxing match where just two exhausted people going around in circles trying to find a knockout blow. It was just farcical. I know... Andy said, at 3-1 you're going, I can't see United fail to win this. But when United went 2-0 up, when Bruno scored that screamer, I couldn't even celebrate properly. I just went, you got to get a third here, because I've been here before. I was there at Copenhagen.
Mate, even a third doesn't help.
No.
Even a third doesn't help, right? Manchester United now are such a weird team that they can be 2-0 up, 3-1 up, and I don't feel comfortable. Because you're always... wondering where's the next way they shoot themselves in the foot. It's very juvenile. It's really childish ways they keep messing up, and it's you can hear it in my voice. I'm just tired. There's only so many times I can write a paragraph that is words to the effect of Manchester United can't control games because they often abandon midfield.
Laurie,
I had great fun. Did no one else absolutely enjoy that?
No, not even a little bit. No, there was nothing enjoyable
about
it.
I know why you had great fun, Laurie, because you weren't the one having to write a piece
immediately.
Dan's doing the match piece and I did the on-whistle piece, so you could just sit there and watch the goals fly.
I wasn't writing any pieces. I didn't enjoy it. The last 20 minutes was agonising. It was awful.
I totally accept that. It's excruciating. And United should have won that game. And the fundamental point is that because they didn't win that game, they're now staring at a Champions League exit.
It's because it was added on to all the other games as well. Like Andy was saying before, it felt like you just watched that match over and over and over and over again, in a way.
Okay, Groundhog Day.
Sorry, Laurie, I'm just shouting all over you.
No, I like it. No, this is what we want.
You
enjoyed it,
you should be able to.
I just loved it because it was just absolutely bonkers. It was 90 minutes where you could not take your eyes off you know, for me, the TV, for a single second because something was happening. Like, all the little instance in it beyond the goals. I mean, you know, United clearly should have won the game from 2-0, should have won the game from 3-1, even should have won the game at 3-3 when they were piling forwards. And the amount of times that they chose the wrong option in
the final third,
it was players shooting from the wrong angle. Even Bruno, when he hit the post, and Scott McTominay, when he put it just wide, play it into Martial. Martial was waiting for so long to get a pass that by the time he did get the pass, he kind of tried to overcomplicate it and it turn back into trouble. Diogo Dalot in the I'm not sure what minute it was, but why is he picking that cross to Palistri? And I know it then ended up into
Goalmouth
scramble.
At the back post when he was in that. Yeah.
I mean, Martial was again there for a tapping. So yeah, that is frustrating, but at the same time, I just found it absolutely breathless. And I, you know, it, it it was football because it was stupid, childish football, but there was some skill involved there. I mean, the goals that United scored were absolutely brilliant. And okay, I know you're shaking your head because the final point is that United are basically cost themselves again to score three goals away from home for a third consecutive Champions League game, and to have 1 point to show for that is absolutely scandalous. So yes, but that doesn't take away from the fact that I was, you know, my head was going left and right and sort of up and down and kind of, you know, round in circles. A bit like Andre Onana in the centre circle when he did that pirouette, that Antony-style pirouette. You sort of forget about those little moments, like, because they just came by in such a flash, and then on to the next thing. And I guess we'll get on to Onana shortly.
I think we should get into Onana now, to be honest. I mean, Andy, we've had a roller coaster ride with him already, and he's only played, what, a quarter of a season for Manchester United. He's definitely improved in the Premier League in recent weeks. There's no question about that. But I think the cold, hard fact is that almost single-handedly, he's cost Manchester United 7 points in Europe. I mean, tonight, certainly the first two, arguably the third, and the nature of the second goal, it's just so far off being good enough, and he'll know that himself. I mean, he used up his opportunity to explain and apologise the first time he made an error in the Champions League this season. He could have done several post-match interviews already.
Yeah, you can do that once, maybe twice, but when it keeps happening, just looking through my messages, one of them is, Andre Onana is a goalkeeper who has made the most errors leading to opposition goals in the Champions League since 2018-2019, in brackets, seven. I mean,
you consider of those seven mistakes, four of them are in the last five games.
He was actually the most experienced Champions League player on that pitch at kickoff tonight. I mean, he got to the final, of course, with Inter Milan, as we know, last season as well. His level is so far beyond what he's shown for United in the Champions League this season, surely.
Last season, Pep Guardiola picked him out, not in a sort of magnanimous way when you've won. He really raved about his quality for Inter Milan. And when he signed, you could see why Erik ten Hag wanted him. You've seen evidence of how United want to play with him, probably best in that first half at Arsenal. Even tonight, he moved forward to the halfway line at one point and played a long ball forward. But I watched him closely tonight. He gave the ball away twice in the first 7 minutes with poor distribution. And that would have been forgotten about had he not made the higher profile mistakes. The positioning was poor, or it seemed to me, in the stadium for the goal. Erik ten Hag was defensive.
The wall was really bad for that first goal as well. I mean, and that's his responsibility to set up as well.
Erik ten Hag was and is defensive of him, and you would expect that because,
of course,
he is his player, and it cost a lot of money. And I think he will get as many chances as a player can possibly get without it starting to look ridiculous. And he has had good matches, but when that second goal went in tonight, it was a head in the hands moment. Apart from the Turkish journalist sat next to me, who were going absolutely mental. The guy next to me didn't stop smoking throughout the whole game. I took a picture, and he went through three packets of cigarettes. Now, there's no way he smoked 60. I don't even think it's possible to smoke 60 inside 90 minutes.
Die.
He was on his third packet, and I've got photographic evidence to prove it. And I felt like saying, are you allowed to smoke in this stadium? But the fact that he kept putting a cigarette underneath the table suggests wasn't.
Maybe not.
There was a fight.
Was he lighting up with every chance or something?
Yeah, he was. There was a fight behind me between two Galatasaray fans who obviously didn't see eye to eye on things. But Onana's going to become a talking point. Now, if United go into the Europa League, you've got to think that the Turkish goalkeeper is going to get a chance. And the Turkish journalists were asking about him because he's a top-level goalkeeper for Fenerbahce. And they're like, why has he not been playing at all? And when United played in the Europa League, Sergio Romero was a mainstay, was really important. And that's happened with other goalkeepers in the Europa League. So maybe we'll see more of him if United go into the Europa League. But yeah, they were howlers. They were howlers, and they'll be hammered for them.
Manchester United are more likely to go into the Europa League now because we've got full time at the Allianz Arena, haven't we, Laurie? What's it ended? 0-0?
It has ended 0-0. So yeah, that means that United can go through if they beat Bayern Munich at Old Trafford, under the floodlights, and Copenhagen and Galatasaray draw.
Whereas if Bayern Munich had won tonight, then United could have still gone through with a victory if Copenhagen had beat Galatasaray, if Manchester right. United's goal difference overall in the group had been better than Copenhagen's overall in the group. It was getting complicated if that had happened, but I'm not
I mean, none of these three teams really deserve to go through, did they?
I'm not convinced United are going to beat Bayern Munich either in that final group game, although we'll come on to later whether we think, you know, a sustained run in the Europa League in the second half of the season is a good idea or not. Laurie, what do you think about Onana?
Yeah, I was really hoping that he'd kind of turned the corner a bit and kind of just got settled and was not trying to do
well, it looked like that,
too
didn't
many
it?
Things. And I think actually that was exactly his fault again tonight, where that the first one is just, yeah, as you say, really bad wall organisation. But then it's those two crucial steps. It wasn't just one step to the left. He didn't trust his wall, clearly. So he's taken a shuffle and then he's taken another step to the left. And he's just, the ball's not even anywhere near the corner. You know, I sort of compared it to Mario Basler, you know, in 99, but I think it's even worse than that one. And the second one, it's almost like he's, it's not at him that, it's obviously come through some bodies, but it's almost like he's seen it with enough time to think, right, I can sort of punch it away here. And instead of doing that, it's just like punched it into his own net. And if he'd just sort of concentrated on just trying to block it in any way, then it would have been a more simple save. Yeah, and obviously his position for the third one, I mean, it's an incredible strike, isn't it? But
yeah, the third one's maybe harsh, but you end up adding it on, don't you, because of the first two in a way,
yeah,
which is probably a bit unfair.
Yeah, the mitigation you give him is shredded because of the previous instances. Yeah, it's a concern, but, you know, Ten Hag's in a bind, really, isn't it? Because he is... That's his guy. You know, he was brought in to kind of try and transform United's way of playing. And as Andy said, it's not really happening though, is it? I mean, there's some moments, Carl touched on it, you at Goodison, where he kind of put his foot on the ball, but it's not like we're seeing, you know, these really intricate passing moves out of defence that he's helping with. Although having said that, the first goal did stem from Onana because it was actually a bit of a pressurised situation that he was put in by Amrabat, I think. And he went long, to be fair. He went midfield. And because you got McTominay there in that, you know, centre circle role, in the Merrow and Fellaini role, I suppose, he wins it in the air, you know, and he brings the momentum and then United build and end up scoring a really good goal. But I don't really think that's the archetypal way that Ten Hag would go for Onana, you know, passing the ball out. But so I think Ten Hag's in a bind where he's brought him in, he's changed the whole situation around the goalkeepers. Bayinde, could he step in? Would he take the plunge and go, actually, this is too many times now, Andre Onana, and particularly in the Bayern Munich game, because it's all been in the Champions League, really, hasn't it, that these calamities have happened. And with such a crucial game coming up against Bayern for United's, it's bigger than just the Champions League and wanting a good run there. It, you know, the financial implications of it are huge.
Yeah, I mean, he's got the joint most clean sheets in the Premier League, Carl, but United have conceded 33 goals in the opening 20 matches of the season. That's the most since 1962-63. They've conceded 14 goals in the first five games in the Champions League. That's the most ever by an English club at this stage. And in fact, in the competition this season, at the last time I managed to check before we started recording, I think only Royal Antwerp had conceded more, and it's only about a decade ago that Manchester United sent their reserves to play for them. So I know they've undergone a bit of a renaissance since, but it's not good, is it?
It's not good. So we're talking about a Manchester United team that have scored 12 goals in the group stages. They're the third highest goal scorers in the Champions League group stages. And yet they're just nowhere across it because Onana is actively spreading fear across his back line now. I don't think Ziyech has a goal on that second free kick if the first one hasn't gone in. I also think the third goal doesn't go in if your man from Galatasaray has gone, this guy's kind of shaky, I'm going to have a pop. During the Everton game, I set myself up for failure because I tweeted Inter Milan fans, did Onana parry this many shots back into dangerous areas? And I got a bombardment of United fans going, shouldn't you have done your scouting? Shouldn't you already know this? And I went, yeah, I do. I did do my scouting. I did watch things. But there does seem to be a noticeable uptick on how many shots Onana is parrying instead of actively catching it. I've made my request in a data team and they've given me every single save Onana made last season for Inter Milan in the league and the Champions League. And I've got every single save he's made before this game as well. So now I'm just putting into tally chart.
Here we go.
Save, parry, save, parry, save, parry. And a piece will come out soon so I can give you a definitive answer as to is Onana the same goalkeeper he was at Inter Milan, or is something happened since he's arrived in England? That'll come out soon. And
there was that one in the first half, wasn't there, where he parried it and he then jumped up afterwards. It was kind of...
He did.
It's odd. I don't know what the...
My favourite one was Goodison Park when he punched the ball and made that much of a mess of it. It just went up in the air and then he caught it. I thought that was a lovely little bit of...
Party trick.
Improvisation.
Have you seen that stat though, Ian? I don't know if you've seen it. The Stats Bomb have put one out, was it today, I think, or yesterday?
Yeah.
You know, he's apparently saved 8.6 goals above the expected base on shots he's faced this season, more than any other goalkeeper in the Premier League.
And I think
that's astonishing.
And I think that's the point of defence for him as well. I mean, even tonight, I think they had something like 7 or 8 shots on target. And it was
because
the point
of the volume
was,
of shots.
Yeah, that I was going to sort of develop. His save percentage is really good in the Premier League as well. I think he's top 2 or 3. But in terms of shots faced, he's up there. You know, there's relegation goalkeepers who have had less shots on target to deal with.
If you are listening to this podcast and you're saying and you're thinking, I'm not having Onana, we should play by and dear, I'm not going to argue with you there. Right? There is a reasonable body of evidence right now to suggest Onana is hurting his team at this point in time, and they don't quite trust him. And teams are beginning to have a go in places where they wouldn't normally have a go. And if you want to put in a new goalkeeper there, fine. I will say, I still think United will be better off eventually having moved on from De Gea. Maybe Onana's not the person, but you did need to cut the cord from De Gea eventually.
So you're not one of these people that's saying David De Gea's still a free agent? He's still playing padel in the greater Manchester area?
20, you know.
Padel?
27.
Is that how you say it?
Just made it even posher.
Is it paddle? How do you say it?
It's already played by the middle classes. You don't need to make it any more posh.
Well, I thought it was like some continental game
darling,
where you have to pronounce it right.
Darling, would you like a game of padel maybe tomorrow? Stockport's finest, Laurie Whitwell. Go on, lad.
If you're talking about 2017 De Gea, yeah, okay, we've got a conversation there. If you're talking about 2023 De Gea, I will remind you what happened when United went over to Sevilla, right? There's a problem with goalkeepers right now at Manchester United, which also comes down to the fact that Manchester United are so porous in midfield and defence, right? Any goalkeeper coming in right now, you're going to have to face 8 shots on target per game because United can't hold onto possession in midfield and the defence, for various reasons, can only, you know, they can only handle a certain critical mass. And I was watching that game on TNT Sport and I'm listening to Robbie Savage go, look at Bruno Fernandes' recovery run. Look how good this is. And then he just
It was the worst timing, wasn't it? The commentator's curse
into a man,
live in action.
Gives away,
both free kicks
gives away a free kick.
A poor from Bruno Fernandes as well,
really,
aren't they?
Really poor free kicks. And these free kicks are coming because of just a defensive scheme just collapses. You know, Manchester United tried to mark man-to-man here and then Galatasaray went, all right, we'll pull you out of position. Scott McTominay wasn't really doing his job. He's far too ahead of the ball. He's on the same line as Højlund for that first free kick. And it's Bruno Fernandes having the track back, eventually getting frustrated that no one else is helping him out and going, fine, I'll foul him here. And hopefully Onana will do his job. At this point in time, Onana can't really do his job. So this is the problem. There's a, you know, they always say it's always individual errors, but at a certain point, individual errors stop being individual and start becoming a symptom of a wider structural issue. And the structural issue right now is Manchester United cannot control games because their midfield setup is a complete mess. And I think the way, you know, I think their defensive scheme, that man-to-man thing, just isn't working.
Andy Mitten, your head's in your hands. What else was wrong then for United tonight? I mean, one thing that stood out to me was Sofyan Amrabat being selected. He hadn't started a game for United in over a month since being taken off at half-time of the Manchester derby. He seemed a surprise inclusion. Just that whole sort of midfield area, again, didn't seem to be ideal for United. And that came after, obviously, Kobbie Mainoo had such a brilliant game at Goodison Park at the weekend.
I spoke to Robbie Savage before the game and he said he had to go with Amrabat. There's no way he could have gone with Kobbie Mainoo. And I said, why? Because he was a Premier League midfielder, Robbie. I know he's not always flavour of the month with Manchester United fans, but I respect his views on football. And I felt that Amrabat was pretty stable tonight. He does have experience playing in this competition. I know everyone was raving about Cobbie, and I could understand why after Sunday when he was excellent, but he's still young. I thought Amrabat, he got booked, I think, but I thought he was all right. He let Scott McTominay go forward. Don't think he was a major issue. I think United had plenty of chances to score, especially towards the end. And I've been pretty disappointed with Amrabat. I've mentioned a few times, didn't have glowing reports to the people I spoke to about him. Another symptom of current Manchester United having to go for loan players. Sabitzer class players, decent players, but would they get into top Manchester United teams? I don't think they would come close to that. The manager goes with the players who he knows, who he trusts, and I think he did that tonight in selecting Amrabat. I think Cobbie will get plenty of chances, but fans shouldn't get too carried away with him. It's incredibly exciting when a young player comes through, but he is a young player. He will be inconsistent, and I just trust the manager to hopefully blend him in so that it becomes regular. But we've seen it with Garnacho. You know, he'll have these incredible moments, and then he'll have three or four games where he gets real minutes and disappoints. So I'm pretty trusting of Ten Hag there. But Ten Hag's got to get it right for himself as well. He praised Zajic's free kicks. I thought that was odd because it's just a way of defending Andre Onana. And I get why managers defend players, and I get why players get really annoyed when they get called out in public. But Ten Hag is going to back the players that he has brought in, the ones that he's really pushed for. And as we've spoke about a lot on this pod, even getting rid of De Gea was a big call. If you look at this midfield now, you miss him. Casemiro, who was probably Manchester United's best player, top three in the team last season. Big loss. Even in the Champions League this season, he's been scoring plenty of goals. So it's a lot to put on Cobbie. Amrabat, technically, I don't think has the ability to shine. Scott was really trying to get forward. He shot over two or three times.
Scott trying to get forward is part of the problem as to why United did not win that game.
Yeah.
There was a point late in the second half. Well, McTominay gave a pretty good post-game interview, and he says, you know, we at a certain point, you've got to kill the game off. And then he kept talking about killing the game off involves scoring another goal. But at a certain point, and I think this is the reason why so many United fans got so excited about Mainoo against Everton, because Mainoo's version of killing the game off is, I'm going to slow things down. I'm going to make sure there is an extra person in front of my defence. I'm going to stand in the right position. I'm going to make that block. I'm going to make that goal line clearance. I'm going to shepherd a player out wide.
I'm going to keep the ball. I'm going to be press resistant and keep the ball and get myself out of difficult situations.
Decore is going to be running towards my back, and I'm not going to backheel it or pass it back to Lindelof and put him under pressure. Whereas McTominay just kept going forward. Well, and that's his job now, basically. Well,
my question there is that it can't be McTominay taking license into his own hands.
It's
Ten Hag. Yeah. It's got to, surely, that has to be Ten Hag's instruction to have that one sitter in Amrabat and then Mainoo and then Bruno and McTominay bombing on. And obviously it worked for the first, it was some great football for the first 20 minutes. And if McTominay, you know,
so is that in-game management then?
Bruno. Well, this is it. It's to start the game, they needed to win, right? So that's probably why he's gone with that attacking thrust to begin with.
Yeah.
And maybe they think, well, we can't really defend, you know, to a clean sheet, so yeah, we do need a third. And then obviously that's the attack where if McTominay cuts it back to Bruno and then he scores, that's 3-0. Maybe that is game over. Instead, it's a, you know, different cross and Bruno gets annoyed and runs back and concedes a foul and it's 2-1 and the whole flow of the game is different. But Ten Hag afterwards said, yeah, it's you know, the players at fault. It's me at fault. You know, I take the blame. If we don't go through here, it's on me, which obviously I think he has to do. But it is just, but he also spoke glowingly about the proactive style that his team played in and goals. And so you're sort of thinking, okay, well, this is obviously what he wants then. So, you know, where's that nuance?
Proactive, you're 3-2 up and you're 3-2 up, you're away from home. The proactive thing there to do is not to go searching for a fourth. It's to kill the game off for 10 minutes. Like, this is why I keep saying United were juvenile and naive. They can't do it. And I watched that. I watched when Amrabat came off for Mainoo, and I'm going, probably should have taken Scott off here. You know, you can talk about Harry hindsight, as Ollie would like to say, but it just felt like the wrong substitution, because McTominay now is best off later arrivals to the box, getting goals like he did for the third. It was a really, really good finish. I was joking, he's the Scottish Jude Bellingham to my mates. But in terms of offering something in possession, in those deeper areas, calming things down, or even, making the tackles that Scott McTominay used to make in 2020 and 2021, he's not even doing that anymore. He is now an attacking player.
It's just been on the news here that that shot he had, they found the ball in the Bosphorus. They just fished it out of it. Sorry, carry on.
Like, Scott McTominay is legitimately one of your most informed goal scorers. But also, when you're 3-1 up and you want to control a game, you don't need him.
We can go back to the treble season, and Manchester United was so exciting in that Champions League campaign. You couldn't take your eyes off those matches. They were 3-3 draws, but they were 3-3 draws in the Nou Camp against a brilliant Barcelona team. It was United going toe-to-toe with the very best. This isn't a very good Galatasaray team tonight. I mean, you can talk up some of their qualities, and I don't think they'd won at home for about 7 Champions League games or something like that. They're not a brilliant side, and United have taken 1 point against them in the 2 matches against them in the group stage. And when United were at their very best for me in Europe under Sir Alex Ferguson, a lot of the matches were really boring, especially the away games, because they just strangled the life out of the game. They kept the ball, they controlled the crowd, they controlled the tempo and the whole thing. And that's when you get to the point where you are a top-level side, Laurie, isn't it? That's the ultimate level of proactivity or control or measure or whatever, is that it doesn't have to be fun or anything like that. It can just be really standard, boring and rudimental in a way.
Yeah, I mean, Paul Scholes afterwards said you don't win games like that by just bombing forwards away from home in Europe.
Well,
very specific. Yeah, exactly. He was away in San Siro, wasn't he, scoring that goal to make it 1-1, and then they were able to kill that game, and that was United through to the semi-finals. It might be boring, but you'd certainly enjoy it more, wouldn't you, Ian, if United won 1-0 and we're going to get into the last 16 here. It's something that you wonder, you'd really be fascinated to know those kind of conversations on the training pitch and then at half-time and on the touchline. What are they thinking? And I think, Carl, you mentioned about the substitutions. I mean, yeah, to make that sub at 3-1 as well, you've got to look back and think that was a mistake. And I do wonder as well if then the later substitutions, and I know Wan-Bissaka was on a booking, I know Garnacho maybe was tiring, and Palestri and Dalot both did things when they came on, but I don't know, I'm not sure that
Palestri could have had a hat-trick.
Palestri could have had a hat-trick. The moment Dalot comes on for Wan-Bissaka, you can see Zaha got an extra spring in his step.
And we went past him twice so easily, didn't it? And that could have been a goal for Galatasaray. It could have been a loss.
If this had happened once in this Champions League campaign, fine. But the fact it's happened against, Manchester United 2-1 up against Galatasaray at home, you win that game. You see it out. You make the necessary changes. You hunker down. You don't be stupid. And what we had was Onana did a hospital pass to Casemiro. Casemiro gets sent off. Everything starts unraveling. Blah, 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 blah. Manchester United 2-0 up against FC Copenhagen in the first half. You're 2-0 up. Okay, Marcus Rashford's been sent off because of the VAR. Get in at half time and make sure you're still in the lead. Right. Hunker down. Keep your shape. Don't go bombing and going to try and kill off a game by getting another goal. This is why when it got to 2-0, I was going, this is going too well. And you are correct. I agree with you entirely, Laurie, when you say McTominay's clearly following instructions, and his instructions now is get forward. But McTominay is one of the more experienced players at Man United now, right? He's played in the Europa League final. He's made deep. He's played against PSG. He's played against PSG multiple times. He's played against some of the biggest teams in Europe. And okay, sometimes he's won, sometimes he's lost. He should know, or should have the awareness in a game to go, hang on, we're under a bit of pressure here. I'm going to drop back a little bit and start playing like I used to next to Fred.
It is interesting that he was Jose Mourinho loved him so much. And I know it was a bit of a point against Paul Pogba, wasn't it, at that period? But he brought him in because he would just do the simple thing and stay in a particular spot and give it simply. Andy, you were there. What was the atmosphere like? And do you think that had any contribution to how United played that game?
It's a good question. I saw Rio Ferdinand before the game and he said he deliberately chosen to come to Istanbul because he wanted to see the atmosphere and to hear it, and he could have easily stayed back in the UK. And he said, I never actually played it, and I was surprised at that because he there were a couple of times when he was at the club when Manchester United played here. It's unbelievable. It's just so much louder than any Premier League game. Even in the hours leading up to the match, the main ultra group, they set off the other three sides of the ground, and it just builds and builds and builds. And there are modern touches, the loudspeakers do kick in. But once they go and the game starts, there's just this primal scream and this roar. It's just loud. I said in the last podcast about the decibel readers, it was 131 the reading. It's unsafe for the human ear or unpleasant going above 110. So I love watching football in Turkey, and my passion for it hasn't been dimmed by that disappointing result tonight. And Galatasaray's new stadium, it is modern. It's probably like the Emirates, but with noise. It isn't the old Ali Sami Yen Stadium. But the fans are incredibly passionate. I took a metro to the ground, and you've got to have your wits about you over here, especially with the history between the two clubs and with English clubs. And
your history, yeah.
One Galatasaray fan opposite, and I just said, stadium this way. And he said, yes, yeah, come with me. And he put his arm around me, and I sort of trusted him, and he guided me through the shortcuts in the metro and said, you come to take a whiskey with me? And I thought, I can't be drinking alcohol. I've got to work, but I'll come and have a drink with you. And we went and we had a coffee, and he was from close to the Syrian border. And I really enjoyed that. And his English was about as good as my Turkish. So we were communicating through Google Translate. And he was telling me about the number of UNESCO sites in his town. And I'm like,
oh, I bet you love that.
Oh, I loved it. He was just a really nice guy. And then he phoned his family up on video call and said, look, I've got an English person here.
Amazing.
Here he is. Like, hi, I'm an English person. And he was a Galatasaray season ticket holder. And it's just a really nice experience that came out of me asking somebody, is this the right metro stop? And he could have turned on me, but he didn't. But they are great fans, and Besiktas fans are as well, and Fenerbahce fans are. I've just had a mad taxi driver coming back because I missed that metro. And he made the grave mistake of calling Manchester United Manchester City. So let all four tyres down when he went to fill up his car. It's a top city, this, and we should mention 2,500 United fans travelled here. The rains have been biblical all day. I went to the 19s game. The 19s lost 1-0 in a really cool stadium in a smart part of town. And I think it was well organised, keeping the United fans away from the Galatasaray fans, because flashpoints absolutely can happen. But maybe in time I'll look back and think that was a wonderful game of football. And I was just, my emotions were all over the place watching it, because you know it's brilliant, you know it's exciting. You're saying to yourself, you can't possibly see your team throw away a 3-1 lead. But in the back of your mind, you know that absolutely this is capable of happening. It did happen, because you've seen Manchester United do this so many times.
Andy, thank you for joining us, mate. It's about 2 o'clock in the morning there, is it? Something like that. So I'll let you go, and I'll preview Newcastle with these two. But we'll see you on the next one.
Thanks. I'm going to go straight to bed. I'm exhausted. Take care.
Night,
see
mate.
You next week.
Sleep
great
time.
There, Andy. Nice one.
This episode is brought to you by Michelob Ultra, the official beer sponsor of the NBA. Want to get closer to the game than ever before? Michelob Ultra Courtside is giving fans the chance to win exclusive NBA prizes and experiences like official gear, courtside seats to an NBA game, and more. Head over to MichelobUltra.com/courtside to learn more.
Looking for an assist with your credit card but can't get a hold of anyone? Luckily, with 24/7 U.S.-based live customer service from Discover, everyone has the option to talk to a real person anytime, day or night. Yep, you heard that right. You can talk to a real human in customer service at any time. Sounds like a real game changer if you ask us. Make the right call and get the service you deserve with Discover. Limitations apply. See terms at discover.com/creditcard.
This episode is supported by FX's Welcome to Wrexham. Celebrity owners Rob McElhenney and Ryan Reynolds' small-town Welsh football club has finally been promoted into League Two after 15 seasons in the National League. dedicated staff and supporters celebrate the city's return to glory while bracing for the newfound challenges that come with being in a higher league. Will Wrexham AFC stand up to the challenge and rise again into League One? FX's Welcome to Wrexham premieres May 2nd on FX. Stream on Hulu.
Get ready for the greatest roast of all time. The Roast of Tom Brady. A Netflix live event happening May 5th. Hosted by Kevin Hart, the seven-time world champion gets his cleats held to the fire by famous friends and frenemies on an unforgettable night where everything is fair game. Tune in on May 5th at 5 p.m. Pacific time for The Roast of Tom Brady, live only on Netflix.
Well, if a trip to Goodison Park was good and a trip to Galatasaray wasn't so much, what will a trip to St James's Park this weekend hold for this Manchester United team? It's been quite a week already, and I feel like Saturday will be pretty eventful as well. We own one, Carl, don't we, after the League Cup and that sort of surrender of a defeat last season at St James's Park?
Yeah, yeah. Although I watched that game against PSG on Tuesday, and I did start getting a bit nervous because they are really, really defensively disciplined now. I have a friend who called them Atletico Tyneside.
They rode their luck, didn't they?
They did ride their luck, but
I think they had seven big chances, PSG. Questionable penalty.
The thing about Newcastle is obviously, you know, they beat Manchester United with a scratch side in League Cup, and now they've
got six fullbacks. I'll never forget that as long as I live.
And now they've got some of their better players returning. Anthony Gordon's going to be there. Feels weird to call him one of their better players, but he's been in good form this season. Miguel Almiron is always seems on the verge of injury, but he seems to be doing well. Bruno Guimarães is the sort of defensive midfield player I would have liked to see in a Man United shirt, but we'll move. And Alexander Isak is, to my mind, a future superstar as well. So they've got good players. It's a Saturday night game. The 8 o'clock kickoff really winds me up. I'm sure if Andy was here, he'd make a comment about the trains and how annoying it'd be to get from A to B so late in the day. But this is going to be really hard against a team. Now, this Newcastle team, they're really physical. They really get in your face, and they're going to want to scrap a bit. And we've seen from this Manchester United team that not everyone is up for scrapping.
Yeah, how do you feel about it, Laurie? I mean, United's record against Newcastle recently isn't great either. The last time United beat Newcastle in the Premier League, actually, was Cristiano Ronaldo's second debut, which feels like ages ago.
Oh, wow. Right, was it? Yeah.
Steve Bruce's Newcastle.
Yeah. Oh, wow. Okay, they've moved on from that, haven't they? The only reason why I might just touch on the penalty again, which I feel was an absolute disgrace.
He's going
for it.
It's just because, like Everton, you know, they might feel some kind of injustice and want... I know it's a different competition and you know, maybe I'm getting reading too much into this, but that might just spur them on to try and really produce against United again.
Are you saying that Alejandro Garnacho needs to score an overhead kick after 2 minutes again?
Well,
is that what needs to happen?
His finish tonight was pretty spectacular as well.
Fantastic, wasn't it?
I mean, another day, that is like, wow, this kid is really the real deal. I mean, that's what Rio Ferdinand called him on commentary.
And it's like with Højlund this season in the Champions League, though. There's been a couple of times where you really want those young lads to be the story.
Yeah.
And it's just not happened, has it?
It's glimpses, isn't it, of a potentially, you know, really exciting future, but you just want it to be the present. You know, you don't want to have to really wait for it. You know, it shouldn't be that United are always thinking about the never or, you know, in 3 or 4 years these players, this team will be great. You know, it kind of needs to be right now. But I don't know, I sense that at least it feels like they can create chances now. I mean, that will be really tested against Newcastle, as Carl said. They've got so many injuries, but the fact that they're able to just organise well, they're committed, aren't they? They know each other's roles. I think having Kieran Trippier right back is such a huge thing for them because he's such a presence. He knows what everyone should be doing. He's so experienced, but also gives them that threat from a set piece if they get a free kick, you know, in the opposition half or a corner or something. And so really, United should be going there wanting to win and feeling like they can win despite all the kind of context of it and the fact that St James's Park, I'm sure, will be very noisy on a Saturday night. I mean, wow, it's been pretty noisy there the last couple of times United have played, and I think that really does inspire the Newcastle players because so much of their game is about hard running and pressing from the front that you need a crowd to kind of be on your side with that and encouraging you and keeping you going. And yeah, like Carl said, I think Anthony Gordon's really surprised me. I think he is, you know, not only does he have that high energy running, but I think he's actually, you know, pretty good technically, better than I thought he was. As he says, Isaac, I think he's a really great striker, very skillful. You just think that they don't have that many options to change things around. So hopefully, I mean, they didn't make a substitution, did they, in Paris? I don't know how much that'll affect them going into the game.
Did you see the bench?
Well, yeah. So I don't know if they're going to have anybody
three keepers,
back.
Wasn't it?
Yeah, three keepers. Miley, the 17-year-old, is now being given
good.
A run out now.
Lewis Miley,
yeah.
He's bigger than I thought he was as well. When I saw him next to a couple of players, I was like, oh, he's not this kind of diminutive sort of teenager. He's quite, you know, physically covered there.
Newcastle are big now. Yeah, Jamal Osells has come in really, really well and covered in Sven Botsman's injury.
He's done ridiculously well. Mm. I mean, he'd barely played for a couple of seasons, really, and he's just slotted in seamlessly.
Which shows the strength of Newcastle's coaching at this point in time, in that players can come in and come out and they know exactly all their roles and they know how to play, which is aggressive front press, counter press really, really hard. So if you lose the ball, you've got to go chase it and run it back. This might be a game, and this feels sacrilegious. I think at this point in time, Garnacho has the lead in the left wing spot. He's got two goals right now. I quite enjoyed the silliness he did when he tried shushing the Galatasaray fans. And Bruno Fernandes, everyone else, going, don't do that. Don't rile him up, we're really sorry. But Garnacho's in good form. I'd like to see him continue in the left wing, which then creates a situation. Do you want to keep Rashford on the right or keep Anthony on there as well? And if Hoyland can play 90 minutes, play him up top as well. So if United are going to get anything from this, it's probably going to need some of the control that Maynou can bring to the team. And then hopefully, let's see if McTominay can continue his crash, bang, wallop, late arrivals into the box stuff.
Yeah, because the thing is, Laurie, that the league is looking very competitive in the top sort of seven or eight places. United obviously now 4 points off the top four in sixth place, 6 points off the top of the table, incredibly, despite how weird this season has been so far. Newcastle are behind them in the table, of course, a point behind them. So, and you think that the matches between the teams are going to be really important in the remainder of this campaign, and it's a record certainly away from home under Ten Hag that United really do need to address.
Far too often they have, you know, they've succumbed to the opposition atmosphere, really, and the way that games can ebb and flow and not been able to just, you know, strangle it, really. Familiar pattern, and as Carl's touched on, what sort of function of midfield do you have to kind of stymie that? I mean, do you start with a more conservative team with the idea that actually you can then step on the gas in the second half because Newcastle, you know, are so hit by injuries and can't really change things? I wonder if that might be one solution, and therefore would that mean Amrabat and Maynou? Would that be too sort of restrictive to United's attacking potential? I don't know. I'm trying to sort of make it up in my head as I'm thinking. But I mean, I suppose the simplest thing is just to start the same team as, you know, against Everton, but with Hoyland instead of Martial. That's a winning team. But I am a little bit conscious of the fact that, you know, in certain moments, Newcastle can really spark and can just chase after defenders and cause turnovers. And, you know, we saw that the Arsenal game where it was kind of an absolutely chaotic goal that they scored. You know, it's that kind of feel that you get in Newcastle, and you know that's the kind of goal that United are susceptible to. The kind of the unexpected, the pinball sort of aspect to it all. And yeah, Newcastle seem to thrive in those occasions.
We can contribute to that. I don't think there's any question about that. Is there definitely?
We love a bit of pinball at Man United right now.
I'm gonna finish with a debate that I don't really want to have, but I feel like we need to have it now.
I think I know where you're going.
Because we're staring down the barrel of a certain situation. So there is a permutation where Manchester United can still go through in the Champions League, and that's for United to beat Bayern Munich and for FC Copenhagen and Galatasaray to draw in their final group game. So it could happen. If it didn't, United obviously then could still go through to the Europa League for the second half of the season, which would involve a playoff game like they had last season against Barcelona. So an extra two matches inserted to an already sort of packed knockout phase of the Europa League, or they could go up out of Europe altogether, which they've not done for a long time. But with it being so competitive, with the issues that United have had this season with injuries, also sort of struggling to find rhythm, Carl, if you could pick, and we can't pick, and it's a bit of a weird question, but if you could pick for the eventuality to work out how you want it to work out, which of the three options would you go with?
Get in the Europa League. I know people would be really annoyed at having to play on Thursdays and having to play on Sundays again, but as my friend is pointing out, I guarantee you, no matter what happens, if United don't end up in the Champions League, the UK TV broadcasters are going to pick United to play on Sundays, regardless of in the Europa League or not, right? The moment United, you can move them, they're going to get stuck on Sundays. They're going to get stuck on Mondays because no matter what happens, Manchester United get loads of eyeballs. So it might be a bit of an ag to be back in the Europa, but I think that'd be a useful means to get consistency and reps from a number of players that need it. You know, I want to see more Garnacho this season. I want to see more Maynard this season. Anthony doesn't seem to be a top level Premier League winger, but he does seem to play better against in Europe, right? He was better against not a great Galatasaray team, and he's had some pretty good contributions against Barcelona and other teams. So if you want to keep Anthony in there, which is, you know, that's your discretion. I know people at this podcast are listening going, he's rubbish, I don't want him anymore. If you want to keep him, he'll be all right in the Europa League. And I'm doing like a gesture away and gesture back.
So would you rather go through to the Europa League than stay in the Champions League, Carl?
No, I'd much rather.
So that's just an obvious question, isn't it? Yeah.
Stay in the Champions League because you need the money and also you need the coefficient. As we're at this point in time and the top four might be changing to a top five with the Swiss format, whatnot, the English teams need to do very well to make sure the fifth place team in the Premier League gets the Champions League spot. United crashing out now is bad, not just for United, but for all the teams in that top six, top seven, because they want that fifth spot. So if you have an option, finish in the Champions League and, okay, you've pulled Inter Milan or Real Madrid out the hat for the next round, bring it on. We know that we can score three goals away from home anyway.
Isn't it exciting when we want to continue in the Champions League to help the Swiss model of coefficient? So considering that's our option A, Laurie, what's option B?
You're asking me the same question as Carl. What would I?
Yeah.
I'd like Europa League dash.
For the same reasons or different?
Well, no, I was just looking at the teams that are in it then. And part of my reasoning, and this probably sounds very selfish with a newborn, but is seeing if there's anywhere new that I can go. Or United fans in general.
I genuinely thought you were about to say so we can stop Liverpool from winning it.
Oh, wow. Okay. I mean, that could be fun. I know we've met there, haven't we, before, and it was a bit of a damp squib, but
United and Newcastle could end up in the Europa League, to be fair, just to add to the mix.
Okay. That would be a bit tedious, really.
What you want very some good crazy teams in Europa League this
locations
season.
To go to. I mean, Carabag are in there. They're currently in the knockout round playoff position of Baku, or what that's where they're located.
Yeah, you've been
now
to Baku before, haven't you?
I know. So maybe, I don't know if you fancied that one, Carl, feel free. It's a lovely city. But yeah, to be fair, I'm actually looking at these names now. There's not that much, you know, glamour or even...
You're talking yourself out of this.
I know, I've suddenly...
Well, let's talk ourselves out of it, just to even play devil's advocate, Laurie. If United weren't to be in Europe in the second half of the season, do you think there could be some benefit to that? Or is it just a stupid conversation?
No, I absolutely do. The benefit would be time on the training pitch, which is something that I think Ten Hag has, even since he joined, felt that there's not been enough of. You know, when then you've had a pre-season tour to America and after, you know, the year previous, you know, Australia and Thailand, you know, there's been a lot of travel in pre-season. How much, you know, really great training blocks are you getting in there? And I know then, you know, you need the matches to really test these methods that you're putting into practice at Carrington. But I feel like that would just allow a bit of room to breathe. We saw the benefit that, you know, for example, Chelsea had. I know this is a bit of a different situation because they went and won the league that year when they had no Europe after the Mourinho meltdown season.
6 points off the top.
Well, but okay, yeah, fair enough, maybe. I mean, zero goal difference just still blows my mind. And, you know, the fact that... I mean, I suppose at least this Newcastle game would... If United won that, you'd start thinking, okay, you know, maybe they are able to get points against teams other than the ones that are, you know, circling around the bottom.
Tottenham play Manchester City this weekend as well. So if that goes to form and City beat them, that means United could be as little as 1 point outside the top four with a victory at St James's Park. And then it is beginning to look a bit better, isn't it?
I think Carl's point, though, about the extra place for the Champions League, which still probably should go to England, right, as one of them. This is really sexy stuff, isn't it? The old Swiss
come on,
model,
the coefficient.
I think that would necessarily mean that, you know, United should try and go in as many competitions still this season. You know, there's a bit more wriggle room, shall we say, in the league.
Coefficient Reds, we are it.
I feel like I'm missing out. I've not done a little tune yet myself. You know, you two are producing the beautiful tones between you.
It's one word for it, isn't it? Right. Let's leave it there before we sing anything else. But thank you for your company, Laurie and Carl. It was nice to have Andy on from Istanbul earlier as well. He looked absolutely knackered, bless him. But it was good to get him on and get his thoughts on what was a crazy game for Manchester United once again in the Champions League. Thank you for your company listening as well. As always, we'll be back after Newcastle, whatever happens. See you on the next one. Bye-bye.
The Athletic.